This is All Things Considered on North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. As we do at this time each week, a conversation about the week in state politics. Becky Gray from the conservative John Locke Foundation is here, along with Rob Schofield from the progressive NC Policy Watch. Welcome back.
Thanks, Jeff.
Hey, Jeff.
Guns. On Wednesday, 1 month after 17 students were killed at a mass shooting in Parkland, Florida, thousands of students across the country walked out of classrooms in peaceful demonstrations of solidarity. Governor Roy Cooper, in an online Medium post, joined the conversation. He's calling on raising the minimum age to buy guns to 21 from 18, banning bump stocks, and expanding background checks for some automatic weapons. Is there any indication that this is going to lead to concrete action here in North Carolina, either from the legislature or from the governor in perhaps the form of an executive order? Rob?
I think it's going to happen eventually. I don't know if it's going to happen in the next couple months or during the short session, but I feel like the momentum has finally changed on this issue. We are starting to see, you know, sort of regular people who have been sort of the silent majority on this issue starting to really stand up. There was a great poll recently from Elon University. They polled teachers about their attitudes towards these issues. Hundreds and hundreds of teachers, and they asked them, for instance, about the issue of more thorough mandatory background checks on gun purchases. They didn't have one teacher of any, you know, persuasion say no to that. I mean, literally, it was 100% in North Carolina. So I think average people are standing up. The kids are leading us. I'm encouraged. I think there's some hope that we might actually make some progress on this.
I think we're going to make some progress. And, Jeff, one thing that you mentioned the governor's stance that's come out this week, but also the House has established a special committee on school safety that I believe their first meeting is next Wednesday. So they are beginning to look at it as well. We're also hearing things at the federal level. I think that there are some things that can be done at the state, and I think it's a conversation that we need to have in our communities, at the General Assembly, at the governor's office, but also at the White House. So I think that the time has come. There have been too many administrations that we have gone through where nothing has been done, and I think the time to do something. And I think that it's not just a matter of looking at the guns, who owns them, how they own them, how they get them, but also the responsibilities of law enforcement, the responsibilities of the FBI. There's a lot on the table in this discussion.
Sticking with the governor, an unrelated topic, Roy Cooper announced this week he will seat the State Board of Elections. This is at the same time he is suing over an effort by the legislature to restructure that board. As a reminder, we have not had a State Board of Elections or full county boards for more than a year. So moving forward with pending litigation on the table, it's all kind of convoluted. Was this the right move by the governor to seat the board, and why?
Absolutely. It's time that we have a State Board of Elections. We have elections coming up. The primary will be in May. There are questions about campaigns already that we're seeing. Many of the county boards of elections also are not fully staffed. And so in order to make our elections run smoothly and efficiently, as we as taxpayers and as voters should expect them to, we need to have a State Board of Elections in place. And it's time for the governor to appoint these. And I commend him for moving forward with this.
It's a good he didn't really have a choice. He had to move forward. Our Melissa Boughton at NC Policy Watch wrote a story this week in which she sort of spells out the history of what's been going on in this litigation and the various back and forth in the Board of Elections, Board of Ethics Enforcement, worth checking out to get that background. But, you know, Governor Cooper's still keeping up the fight. He's not giving up on this issue. He still believes, and I think with some good reason, that Republicans are still trying to rig elections in this state. They did it with the voter suppression laws they passed. They've done it by trying to seize control of the Board of Elections and Ethics Enforcement. This ought to be an executive function. That's Governor Cooper's position, which has historically been the position in North Carolina. So, you know, this has been the pattern. Unfortunately, Governor Cooper has had the General Assembly attacking, trying to take away his powers from before he became governor. He's going to continue to fight and take this, I think, once again up to the state Supreme Court.
Well, again, after, you know, Rob's right, after months and months and months, after very expensive litigation, dragging feet, us being without a state board of elections, the latest remedy that the General Assembly has come up with, I think, really ensures fairness. There will be four members of the Republican Party, four members from the Democratic Party, and one from neither party. It'll be an independent in case of a split vote. This is a fair way to do it. I think this is the most effective and most efficient resolution that we could have had to this, and it's time to get it done, move on. We've got elections coming up. talk about voter suppression, when you have all this confusion over these kind of things and nobody in charge of elections, it really chips away at the integrity of our elections. So the General Assembly has come up with a reasonable and a fair solution to this. The governor is appointing those. It's time for us to move forward with this.
But I'm not sure that it will actually stand constitutional scrutiny in the long run. I still think there's a very good chance that the courts will strike down what the General Assembly has done, which they passed in this omnibus bill with all kinds of other provisions. I think it's quite likely and quite possible that it'll be struck down as unconstitutional.
In Pennsylvania, a special congressional election narrowly went the way of the Democratic candidate this week. This is noteworthy in part as Donald Trump won the district by more than 20 points just 16 months ago. A day later here, a GOP strategist sent an email to Republican House lawmakers. That email was leaked. In it, he encouraged candidates to take their races seriously, get out there and raise money, and noted that the majority for House Republicans could be at stake here. Rob, how in play is the GOP majority, not the supermajority, the simple majority?
You know, nothing's inconceivable. I think the Democrats are incredibly motivated. They perhaps as never before. There will be races statewide. As I've said many times on this show, the presidency of Donald Trump has created a sea change in American politics, and it has clearly motivated progressives and Democrats like never before. And so it seems to me at least conceivable that we could see sort of a seismic change in North Carolina politics in 2018. But I still think it's a long shot. I mean, this is a long way away. Politics, the districts are still badly gerrymandered. The Republicans will still have millions upon millions of dollars to spend on these elections. We're months and months away. But, you know, it makes sense, I suppose, that the Republicans are sending memos like this because they're concerned and they want to motivate their people to action. So it doesn't terribly surprise me that they have raised this concern on their side.
I think everybody involved in this should be concerned, and I think that's healthy. I think it's good for us, the voters, to have that kind of competition, to have incumbents have to answer for their records, and to have new challengers enter the field, ask questions, talk about ideas. I work at a think tank. I think the marketplace of ideas is powerful. What we saw, I think there's one lesson that we learned from this Pennsylvania race. It's that the candidate really matters and what district that candidate is running in. So I think to make these wide sweeping changes that take all of North Carolina politics, all of the legislative races, and try to cram them into one box doesn't understand the differences and the diversity that we have across the state, the diversity of candidates. And I'm really excited about this race because this election cycle, if you will, because we do have candidates challenging in almost every one of the 170 legislative races. And I think this is healthy. I think it's good for voters, and I think it's good for democracy.
I will just say that if we had fair maps, if we had non-gerrymandered maps, I think it's entirely possible that the Democrats could win control of both houses of the General Assembly. Given the fact that gerrymandering remains the norm throughout the state, I think that makes it very difficult.
I think one thing to remember is in 2010, Republicans won both the House and the Senate under Democrat gerrymandered districts. So I think that North Carolinians are smart. I think that they're motivated. I think all of them should be motivated to vote. I hope they continue to listen to our show, Jeff, and these discussions that we have, and realize how important so many of these issues are.
You did mention the candidate, and I would just note that Connor Lamb, who won the congressional seat, positioned himself as a very moderate Democrat. Pro-guns, didn't invoke really very much the name of Trump either way, didn't rail against the president, but was still victorious on Tuesday. And as we've talked about here in this program before, these seats can be very different. There's really a range of these congressional seats across the country. So candidacies here, they're going to look very different, some of them, obviously.
Right.
So
turnout's important.
Right.
Motivation is important. Circumstances that happen just in the days leading up to the election are important. So a lot of wild cards.
One final question. We learned in an email that was sent this week, this one was a public email, not leaked, from Paul Coble, Legislative Services Officer at the General Assembly, to the NC Insider, that sexual harassment training or harassment workplace training is going to take place in the months to come. A reaction or two from each of you on what we learned about this yesterday, and what, if anything, was missing?
I don't think anything was missing. We'll see. This was just announced, and we'll see how it's rolled out. But there's different types of training available to the staff, to the members. Even the interns are going to get some training in this. I think it's a great first step, or I think it's a great step forward with this. I really do, and I commend Paul Coble and the leadership at the General Assembly for moving forward with this. It's long overdue, and I think it's really a positive step.
My reaction is, thank goodness, what took you so long, it's long overdue, and it's a very small first step. We need a lot more. We need, as I've said here on this show before, a concrete, usable, user-friendly process in which people can complain in a nonpartisan, confidential environment, and still we do not have that in the North Carolina General Assembly. People who are victimized by legislators, who act in an inappropriate way, have no reasonable place to go. It's great that we're going to teach some of these guys not to act like dirty old men. That's a great step in the right direction, but it's taken too long to get to this point, and we still have a long way to go.
And according to the email, what Paul Coble has said is that there will be the training, but there will also be a process in place for people to go to make complaints. And so I think it's two parts of that. One, people that work there are going to get the training, not only about how they're supposed to behave and what's going on, but also setting up that reporting process that is so important with this.
But I would just say, ultimately, it's going to be up to the leadership of the legislature to really establish. I mean, it's great that Paul Coble, who's running the building, takes these steps, but we're going to need the leaders of the General Assembly to endorse that and stand up for such a process as well.
That's where the power levers are, for sure. Rob Schofield is director of NC Policy Watch. Becky Gray is senior vice president at the John Locke Foundation. Enjoy your weekend.
Thanks, Jeff.